In dieser Folge interviewe ich Dr. Kelly Starrett. Jeder, der CrossFit schon ein bisschen länger macht, wird mit diesem Namen etwas anfangen können. Er ist der Godfather of Mobility Training. Er ist New York Times Bestseller-Autor von Becoming a Supple Leopard. Er hat ein Mobility-Programm, früher hieß es Mobility What, heute heißt es The Ready State. Er hat es damals gegründet, er hat das Wort Mobility quasi erfunden und ist wie gesagt einer der bekanntesten Therapeuten und Trainer weltweit. Wir sprechen gemeinsam über das Thema CrossFit, über das Thema Mobility-Training, sowohl in der CrossFit-Box als auch bei Profiathleten. Also für jeden was dabei, ich wünsche dir viel Spaß beim Zuhören. Willkommen zu Die geilste Stunde des Tages, dein Lieblingspodcast rund ums Thema CrossFit in Deutschland. Ich bin Felix, CrossFit Level 3 Trainer, Affiliate Owner von CrossFit Aschaffenburg und leidenschaftlicher CrossFit Athlet. In diesem Format teile ich meine Erfahrungen aus über 10 Jahren CrossFit Training und Coaching. Neben spannenden Solo-Folgen erwarten mich auch Interviews mit Top-Athleten und Trainern aus der ganzen Welt. Also bleibt dran und viel Spaß bei dieser Folge. Kelly, I think for the people who are into CrossFit for several years, they don't really need an introduction to who you are as a person. I think you've shaped the whole industry because you're someone who's around for, I think it's almost 20 years, right?
Almost. I've been in CrossFit for 20 years this year. That's correct.
It's crazy. Time flies.
a lot of pull-ups.
Yeah, I just, funny enough, when I drove home with a car 2 hours ago, I listened to your podcast with Annie Sakamoto, and you talked about pull-ups and how your wife learned to do pull-ups, and then she beat you in every workout.
This is genial, bless me. It's true. We, the problem with being married to a world champion and a college rower is that she's very, very fit. And as everyone knows, you get all of your mitochondria from your mother, and my mother did not have the same mitochondria as my mother-in-law. So I'm always battling Juliet. She's an amazing athlete.
Yeah, I fully understand that. My wife, she is amazing as well. So whenever we do burpees together, I can do one and she's doing like 10 at the same time. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's true.
So I did a little bit of preparation for this today, and I listened to your podcast for several years now. And in, I think it's season 4, where you interviewed CrossFitters or people from the CrossFit space who started very early on, and you asked them about their history. And I think for today's conversation, it would be very nice if you start with your history and your first introduction to CrossFit. So can you remember your first CrossFit workout?
The first CrossFit workout was Cindy. Seemed very simple. 5 pull-ups, 10 push-ups, 15 air squats. Just do that for 20 minutes. And I was just crushed, just devastated. And I was doing that on an easy day. I was training Olympic lifting in South San Francisco with a coach. I was riding my bike. Thought I was very fit. And I wasn't. I got crushed. I think I did 12 rounds and laid on the ground for 20 minutes afterwards in the days. Like I had nothing, you know, all those air squats destroyed me. Then I did Fran because that was obviously a fluke and Fran seemed so simple and that killed me. And then I did Helen, which is, you know, some running kettlebell swings and some pull-ups and that destroyed me. And I was like, what is going on here? Like, this isn't actually very much work. And, you know,
was it all in 1 week or
probably about 10 days where I was just like, what is happening here? You know, this is so difficult. And I think it's easy to forget how the world has changed so much. So when I first did CrossFit, I was at a big global gym and you couldn't, like, they didn't have kettlebell there. You couldn't buy a kettlebell in the city of San Francisco. So a lot of these things, you know, were crazy. I taught myself to kip because I was like, I have to be able to link more of these pull-ups together. And when I showed up at my level 1 and I could kip already, I could link pull-ups, everyone was shocked. They're like, who taught you that? And I was like, I had to teach myself. Otherwise, I wasn't going to get through these workouts doing singles, you know? So, you know, the world has changed. And when we all started this 20 years ago, no one was very fit, no one was very strong, and no one was very skilled. And now, you know, my 15-year-old daughter can snatch a kettlebell like it's nothing. She can front squat. You know, it's just the language that we now are so comfortable with, this sort of higher intensity, has really changed. And we're starting to see now that if you give a couple decades of experience, we really, start to see athletes who are much more coordinated, comfortable with the movement language, and are able to now employ it and do a sport. I think that was my critique of CrossFit, has been that we evolved into a time where all we did was CrossFit and we stopped doing sports because we didn't have time. And we now tried to meet everyone's needs in the gym instead of the original idea of what's this sort of minimum essential dose that I can actually go and play a sport or I can do something outside the gym.
So that was 2005 already, or was it before you opened your affiliate?
That was before. So we started CrossFitting in really 2004.
So and your affiliate was one of the first affiliates worldwide. I think it was like in the top 50, right?
Yeah, we're 21.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Oh, wow. That's a long time, actually.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting there, it was a really heady time because we got to, you know, no one was really good at powerlifting unless you're a powerlifter. So we were spending a lot of time with the powerlifters and Louis Simmons and Mark Bell and Jesse Burdick. And we were trying to figure out how are we integrating the best of powerlifting. And at the time, we really thought that just being so brutally strong was the solution. And then all of us were suddenly around all these Olympic lifters, Dave Spitz, Mike Bergner. I just think Sean Waxman, some of the early pioneers in our community. Of course, can't forget Mark Repetoe. And then we started to layer in sort of expertise in some of these other things. And what was fun was that we were figuring things out. And then there was enough of us and the world was small enough that we could communicate our findings. It was like we discovered gold and someone would give us a new technique and we would go, you know, mine more gold, and then we would share our gold with someone else. And it was really just a radical, radical time. And ultimately, you know, I'm a young physio student at the time, and I'm trying to understand what it means to be a physio student. And I'm trying to understand sort of the real essentials in all of these disciplines. And that's where I really ended up starting to think critically and developed our model for understanding human movement. Because what we were seeing is that people didn't have the range of motion required to do these things. They didn't know how to care for themselves. They didn't know how to address pain. They didn't know how to, you know, prepare themselves. And, you know, some things that we very much take for granted today, you know, people didn't warm up very well. You know, they didn't know how to scale things. So, you know, the world has changed a lot in 20 years and it's getting better. And we're starting to still see that the coaches in today are so much more sophisticated than we were, and they have to be because the general population has caught up a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally know what you mean. I mean, I think, especially for my own training, some things probably haven't changed, especially when it comes to warming up properly or focusing on mobility training. But that's just from my perspective.
You know, and that's okay. You know, there's some things that I think what's happened is, my critique of training is that we have seen physical culture really take root in the gym. And the person, it's Ido Portal who really invented the idea of physical culture. And physical culture is beautiful, but its application towards sports is maybe not so clear. And most of us can't spend 2 hours playing in the gym. And what's happened then is that the gym has become really a laundry list of items I'm checking off just to meet all of the vitamins, all the nutrients, getting all the sunlight, doing all the aerobic capacities, doing all the strength. And it's really lost its opportunity to play, to innovate, to iterate, right? To explore and experiment. Those things have really gone out of the gym when we should be using that gym as a time to feel better, solve problems. Instead, we think, I have to get people going right away and they're expecting a hard workout and all of these other things. And we've lost some of the mystique of the gym because it's impossible to do all of those things in and out.
So before I stumbled over Mobility Watt, which is like, I don't know, I think I'm doing CrossFit for 12 years now. It has to be like 10 years. I've never heard of the word mobility, and I think you've defined it tons of times already, but it's still very valuable for my community, for the German community. if you would like describe it in 1 or 2 minutes, what did you invent this word, or did you just make it so popular in your own understanding, in your own definition? So what's the root of it?
So no one was using the word mobility before we came on the scene. They used flexibility, right? They used stretching, which were really specific terms that meant some kind of pulling on the muscle, right? Like I would stretch my hamstrings. We didn't think in systems approach to that. So if I take a step back, if you read Wer ein geschweiniger Leopard, one of the things that you'll see is there are only two objective measures in that book. The first one is your range of motion. And that is really, you can't argue about what we expect the body to be able to do. Every physician group, right? We all agree within about 5 degrees of how much the shoulder should move or how much rotation a joint should have. So it's pretty clear. And most of the ranges, like overhead, is everyone agrees, you know, 180 degrees of motion. So my end range of flexion is straight up and down. So I have that objective measure. And the only other objective measure I have is something we call biomotor output, which means how do I use this system to create more wattage, more force, more power for longer periods of time with less energy, right? That's really what we're talking about here. So you can get away with a lot of really weird technique, but what you're doing there is sacrificing the biomotor output. You're not as efficient. And one of the things that we'll see, for example, is if we look at squatting, you can squat in almost any position possible. We see it every day in the gym. We see it on the internet. But squatting is low power, low force, low speed. But at high force and high speed, you can't squat like that. You can't jump like that. You'll die. So we see that sometimes the positions that we are valuing may not transfer as effectively, may not hold true under all conditions. And so what we're asking is what positions give us the most utility or the most useful under the most circumstances and have the most transference. And so suddenly that starts to winnow down a lot of some of the positions that people are exercising in. Because if it's just about fitness, then we can just give everyone blood flow restriction cuffs and put them on a bike, right? We can give you steroids and give you some low loads and we are going to get big muscles and that's it. But that's not how we teach athletes. That's not how we ski faster. It's not how we bike faster. It's not how we run faster. It's not how we go to the Olympics. And so suddenly what we have to put in there is a movement skill. So really what we're asking, when we say mobility, what I'm saying is, do you have access to your range of motion? Can you express that range of motion with the technical ability that allows you to handle the most force? So that means learning. That means skill. I would also add, can you do what you want to do with your body and in a pain-free way? So we use mobility because your range of motion has clear goals. We have clear end ranges. What is complete and what is not complete? Not, I'm just going to keep stretching forever and then hope that my legs, and you know, that doesn't work. We have clear range of motion goals. And if you read Becoming a Supple Leopard, the first 2/3 of that is about how to move and how to apply all of these principles of movement into the formal language and strength conditioning. The last 1/3 of the book is really about what are some tools to help you get range of motion so that you can do what you're supposed to do. So how do we go from active straight leg raise, where I lay on my back and lift my leg up, but really who cares about that? That's not a sport. How can I hinge over on the bike so I can generate more force in the Tour de France? Those are the same positions.
So for you who really like shaped this word, I mean, this whole concept of mobility training is like your child, right? So during the last 15 or 20 years, a lot of things have changed and now everybody does mobility training and everybody just look out there in the gyms, not even CrossFit gyms, but everywhere. There are mobility classes everywhere. So what are the mobility myths which annoys you the most? Is there anything that you constantly hear, where you like get a little bit angry when you hear it again?
Well, what's great is that people are suddenly thinking about position as part of the training language. It really wasn't part of the training language for a long time. The reason you would do some soft tissue work is because you were in pain, right? And that's a good reason to do some soft tissue work. We have found that when I ask a group of athletes who's pain-free, no one raises their hands. So pain can't be a medical problem the way we've been told it is. So, I have Schmerz, I need to see the doctor. No, that doesn't happen. Athletes will continue to go and ignore that until they can't do their job, occupy their role in society, be their role in their family, right? You just can't do your sport. You'll keep playing. So on the one hand, what's been great is suddenly that can be a really interesting way into giving people control over their bodies. Do we think about training and how it's related to nutrition? Yes. Do we think about training, how it's related to sleep? Yes. Well, what is the fundamental root of training? We're taking positions that we value and we're challenging your ability to manage those positions under load, under cardiorespiratory demand, under metabolic demand, under speed demand, under, you know, closed chain, open chain demand, other competitive demand, open torque, closed torque, hanging from a bar, handling two dumbbells, right? Block practice, random practice, changing gear. Suddenly, I can make it so hard that your basic squat falls apart. And what I found is, wow, maybe the limits of your ability here wasn't just your strength, but it was your ability to manage all of these different components and still show me a decent squat. And when we look at that, then what we're really doing is saying, here is a position we value that makes us strong, that makes us durable, that transfers to sport and to life. And now I'm saying, can you maintain the integrity of that shape under all these different demands? And our hypothesis has been, this is just a hypothesis, the person who's the most effective at managing these different iterations of the shape under these different demands, that athlete is more durable. That athlete can learn new skills faster. That athlete has more movement choice and more readily available movement solutions. So suddenly, if we look at someone like Frans Bosch, who I greatly admire, he's a Dutch coach, he says resistance training is just coordination training with resistance, right? Good strength training is just saying, here is coordination training, but we're going to put some resistance on that. And suddenly that's a beautiful way to think of why we're in the gym. It's not for big quads. It's not for big pecs, although that's nice. It's a side effect of the training. But ultimately, we're looking for how can we create the best mover? And if you've watched the great show on Netflix, The Physical 100, the Korean show, the kid who always wins is a CrossFitter. The kid who usually gets second is a rugby player or an Olympic lifting sprinter. And there's not an accident there because those capacities make for people who can solve movement problems efficiently. Everyone else may be obsessed with how you look, and that's great on the internet, but you're not going to win a national championship or set a world record doing those things. And so we always are keeping our eyes on what's the point, what's the purpose? And the purpose can be to lose weight, to have community, right? To feel better, to feel like I have confidence. So, but ultimately, don't pretend that all training is equal, and that's okay that it's not all equal. So what I'm seeing as we're starting to put position forward in our training language is that it means different things to people. So people are like, I'm working on mobility. I'm like, no, you're just squatting. That's not working mobility. Mobility is specifically targeting some aspect of your range of motion so that you can then go express that range of motion in something that matters, like a training environment or an actual sport. So, you know, it may be that it's useful to spend a lot of time moving in a way. Exposure is always the most important thing we can do. This is why the very first video I made back in 2010 was the 10-minute squat test. Because what I found was, here is this position all of these athletes are trying to spend time in, and they're not actually spending any time in that position. So let's make sure that the first thing we do is expose ourselves to the root positions of the things we're doing. Now, I learned that from yoga. I learned that from, you know, watching the amount of time I did downward dog. I learned that watching how many times my friends who were gymnasts were walking on their hands right? I saw that we needed to spend some crucial time in these fundamental shapes because they were so important. And that's why we started with the squat test.
So when you talk about movements, what movements you see, especially in CrossFit, where people have the most mobility issues?
Well, what we're seeing now is that, and generally in general population and most athletics, is that people are not getting enough hip extension. So bringing the knee behind the butt. So you know, everyone knows knees over toes guy, but I want to be knee behind butt guy. This is my dream. And that I want us all to obsess on having better hip extension. And all the biking, all of the hip hinging, all of the squatting, most of the jumping we're doing, it's all in a flexed leg pattern where the knee is coming to chest. And we're not really doing much of knee behind butt. Maybe we jerk a little bit. Maybe we're lunging, but even our lunges really have the knee not in extension. We run, but our running is terrible because we only run very short distances. And so suddenly we see we have a hole that we're creating in our training. And that's what we're trying to do is ideally training, you know, and Greg Glassman talked about this, is that we should be attacking our weaknesses, right? We should be going after things that we're not very good at. And if that may be a certain cardiorespiratory domain or maybe a strength piece, if you have a big engine, but what we should be looking at is what are my positional and movement blind spots as well. So if you ask me to evaluate your warm up, your cool down, mobility work, but more importantly, your training, I'm going to see where you're spending your time and what positions and shapes you're valuing. And I can tell where you're going to have problems based on the fact that you don't have any sunlight in this part of the aquarium. So over here, you have these beautiful rain and nutrients. And over here, it's like a desert. And you're wondering why you have desert-related problems.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, right? You're only as strong as your weakest link.
Well, you know, when we say that, the problem is we don't put position in that language, right? You know, there's a reason why skin the cat and dips and burpees and press and chaturanga is such an important part because we need to have the arm be able to come into extension if I want to have a shoulder that works correctly. If I'm not loading that position, I'm never going to have a shoulder that does what a shoulder is supposed to do. How many athletes do we see who really struggle overhead? And what I can tell is you're not very competent overhead because you haven't lived overhead. But as soon as I give you pull-ups and handstands and kettlebells and dumbbells and barbells, and we're overhead from a snatch, we're overhead from isometric hold, we're overhead hanging, you're going to see, wow, this is a position we really value because people who are competent overhead have less shoulder pain. People who are competent overhead have less neck problems. People who are competent overhead, right, have thoracic spines that function more effectively. So what we can start to say is, if I come into your training, and this is worth a conversation, what is essential in your movements? What's essential in training that human beings should be exposed to? We can then argue about, well, how often do I need to do that? That's a legitimate argument. And are there some positions I should really value because they're very important to my sport? That's also worth talking about. But for example, my daughter, who is a volleyball goalie, you know, she's an incredible goalie. She's 15. You know, yesterday we're trying to do these little mini sessions of strength training at home before practice because the practice is so much. And, you know, yesterday she does a little bit of warm up and then she jumps into the front squat. We're just doing some basic linear progression work with her. We add, you know, 2 kilos every single time we come in, right? And, in between, it's handstands, okay? And coordination, play, right? Loading, but we're knowing that this is such an important position for her that we do a pull-up or a handstand or something every day as part of her training because it's so important to her as a goalie.
So what about you? Is there any specific movement which you're not that good at, which you
Everything. I'm improve? Terrible at everything.
I don't believe that.
I've paddled in a couple world championships. I have paddled in 3 kinds of different national championships in paddling sports. I love to move, but really biking is my favorite sport. And what I've found is my wife and I love to mountain bike, is that I can never have lungs that are big enough. I can never have an aerobic base that's big enough. It's literally a sponge that is always thirsty. So, you know, at some point, you know, I turned 50 this year, and I can actually say I'm strong enough in some things. So I don't need to get stronger, but I need to maintain the exposure to these positions and shapes. I don't want to get heavier. I don't want to get stronger. What I want to do is be competent enough in these domains to maintain that strength. And that's a lot easier. And it's not, and it's a great privilege to say, I think I'm strong enough. And now I get to then turn my brain on something and spend my time now developing these other capacities. And that means I need to have the biggest set of lungs possible. And that's my mountain biking. So I bike 3 to 5 days a week.
What distances?
It depends. Sometimes they're very gnarly intervals. And a lot of times I'll do a brutal interval and then some kind of strength training in between. So that's a way that as an older adult, I keep myself from getting hurt. And by hurt, I mean letting my ego get into problems, right? This allows me to maybe do, you know, a 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minute piece, and then maybe some strict pressing. A 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minute piece, and then maybe it's sets of pull-ups. So 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minute piece, and maybe it's power cleans. What this does is it really allows me to say, hey, my mountain biking when I go ride can be zone 2, zone 3, zone 4, fun, play. I don't really worry about it, but I can take the week training when I'm not on the bike and I can be very disciplined about saying, hey, I haven't spent time developing peak wattage or I haven't spent time doing these domains. So it allows me to tweak and play with the domains, and then putting in a strength piece in there is a wonderful way to get a lot of work done.
So for me as a box owner, I mean, I'm doing this for 8 years and I saw a lot of people come and go. And what's usually the case is that they have a limited amount of time where they can spend on their training. And it's always the thing, where do I put my time? Is it strength? Is it endurance? Is it, I mean, CrossFit is a good combination of everything, but still you have to check where you put in your time. So what would you say? Is there a ratio between how much strength, how much endurance, how much mobility training is good, or does it depend from individual to individual?
Well, I think we can generally say, you know, people will have this conversation, but they can't do 10 pull-ups. They have this conversation, but they can't do 10 push-ups. They have this, they're asking these questions and they can't back squat their body weight yet. Or, right, strict press, you know, 40 kilos. So I think what we start to see is, wow, you really want to have this nuanced conversation, but really it doesn't matter because you're terrible at everything. And so I'm like, just come to the gym and enjoy strength training 2 or 3 times a week during when you're really busy. And then when you're not really busy, come 5 times a week and we can really start to develop these capacities. And, you know, if you can only come to the gym twice a week, that's great because you should be coached. Then you better be swinging a kettlebell and doing these kinds of things at home. And, you know, one of the things that we see is so important is that the training environment, and more importantly, the formal training environment, is the place where we can talk about alcohol consumption, nutrition, sleep, stress. For our athletes, so I'm wearing a Cal water polo shirt. So Cal Berkeley is the university right across. And for the last year and a half, I've been coaching the women's water polo team. Last Sunday, we competed in the national championships. So we lost, but it was still, we haven't been there in a long time. And what is important though, is that through training, we now have a lens of understanding all the other critical behaviors that make us really good people, that make us very durable people. And that's one of the reasons why the training environment is so important, is that we can talk about body composition here. We can talk about fears here. We can talk about loci of control. Who owns this training experience? We can set people up to say, hey, I don't want to spend 10 minutes foam rolling in the gym. Do that at home in front of your TV. Instead, today, let's work on some skills because we're in the gym. So what can we get out of the gym, right? Like we try to have our athletes in the morning do a hip spin up, do a shoulder spin up, or do the breath spin up. You get one of 3 choices in the morning if you're one of my athletes. Then we try to have you move during the day, walk as much as possible, eat the best food you can. If you can train, do it. Then in the evening, let's spend 10 minutes of some soft tissue down regulation time in front of the TV while we're sitting on the ground. And suddenly, that's a pretty complete program. That's a program that we can really make a lot of gains with and start to solve pain problems, start to develop capacities. And what we do there is we're starting to say, hey, out of this training, if I do these morning things and evening things, my training will go better, right? Because we're always through the lens of how do we get more work done with the available human in front of us. But if you don't train, suddenly training is now helping you to live a better life where we are decongesting and we're getting enough micronutrients and we're getting enough protein and we get sunshine and we have community, right? So there's so many opportunities for us to improve some of those things, but again, through the lens of training. So people who tell me, I'm like, you still need to come to the gym even once a week.
So the good thing about CrossFit and strength training is that if you hit certain numbers, I mean, you just said squatting your body weight or doing 10 pull-ups or, for example, bench press your body weight. I mean, there are certain numbers where you would say, okay, this person is strong enough. And if he or she can maintain their strength, that's good. But is there something in the mobility language where you can like check this box? Okay, this is enough shoulder flexion and extension. Is there something that I can like check the box where I can see in my training? Okay, I think I don't have to work on my overhead mobility. It's good enough. I can focus on something else. While I'm having this issue and this conversation with a lot of athletes who focus on stuff that doesn't really push the needle. They're so focused on the little things instead of like looking at the bigger picture.
Yes. And what we should be saying is we're not training every single body part every day. So if I'm training, I can take one of the movements that I'm looking at for today and I can look at the start position or the finish position of that movement. And I can ask, because now if I ask, is that range of motion complete? Now the stimulus for training is also the diagnostic tool. And so what I'm trying to do is understand who you are today when you showed up. Have a baby, run a marathon, take an overnight flight. Let's measure your hamstrings. I guarantee you, they're going to show incomplete range. So let me give you an example. I have as I said, my young daughter is 15. She's incredible. She's 5 feet 11. She's almost 6 feet tall. She's very tall. She's still growing. She's a high school kid playing a sport. And her range of motion changes a lot. And sometimes she has excellent range of motion and sometimes she doesn't. But because we have this training language, we now have a way of understanding how her range of motion and her access to her range of motion changes from week to week, from month to month, right? And we can start to say, hey, here's where we're going to focus because these things are starting to go out. So every day we train, we look at one position. Maybe if we're front squatting, then we're looking at hip flexion today. Maybe if it's our Olympic lifting, we're looking at dorsiflexion today. Maybe if we're pressing today, we're looking at the overhead position. Maybe if it's lots of push-ups, it's shoulder extension and the short lever. So what's nice then is that we suddenly have a model to really understand what's happening and to program to that position every day. And you're absolutely right. There's a reason why we have a mobility test on the app, so that athletes can begin to understand their movement minimums and hopefully see those movement minimums in the context of the training we're doing. But people don't. The first time they ask the question, do I have access to range of motion, is never. Even when they have pain, they don't ask, do I have complete range of motion here or not? And so suddenly you might discover that it's never a problem to go overhead. You always have that. Sometimes it's stiffer, but you always have an internal rotation problem. And so that's something that we're going to have to just keep our eye on, maybe do 2 times a week to work on that interrotation. So suddenly that makes your programming very simple at home. Or you can just wait around and say, what's sore? What hurts? How can I make myself feel better and restore my position? That's fine too, but it's just less effective.
So during the last years, you've worked with a lot of pro athletes. In what kind of sport you see the most mobility issues? Except from CrossFit.
You know, it's interesting to see the best CrossFitters in the world. Medeiros, I worked with last year. Talked with Jeff Adler. I'll get on the phone. You know, Yami Tikkanen is one of my best friends. You know, he coaches Annie and amazing people. Rich Froning, I've known forever. Jason Kalipa is a good friend, that we'll see that CrossFitters are some of the best athletes on the planet because they have to work on their position so much to maintain their shapes. You can see sometimes their output doesn't show you all of the work that they're doing on the inside. Look at how much Tia works on her shapes and positions. Look at how Rebecca Fuselier, is managing her shapes and positions and shit. And so what we see is that these athletes are constantly working on blood flow. They're looking on range of motion. They're keeping an eye on stiffness through range. Each sport will have its unique pattern of movement dysfunction. So I'm wearing a San Francisco 49ers hat. They use our model in the program. I go and work with them. The offense looks different than the defense. Our water polo players look different than our volleyball players. The pro golfers I work with look different than the cyclists we work with. So every team will have its unique imprint because the demands of the sport will make the body do some things, and that will create opportunities or blind spots in the shapes that we're not trying to manage. And again, what we start to have to add in is it may be impossible for the athlete to ever have complete range of motion given the volume in their sport, but we can always be programming towards restoring range of motion. And then when the season's over, we can start to make more gains. So it's not that we're just minimizing, but we're saying, look, if you're a Tour de France cyclist or you're a world-class mountain biker, it may be that you're always having to work on hip extension because of the wattage and the time you're spending in this flex position. So let's make sure that we're at least keeping a minimum on it and develop a minimum where we start to see, hey, when you start to fall below that minimum, we see changes in wattage and you start to see pain problems. And so we really start to see that it's a lot more sophisticated than just mobilize everything. But again, what we're interested in is saying, how can we have GPP, general physical preparedness for adults, so they don't have pain and can feel better, move better, look better naked? And then how can we also reapply these same principles to actual sports like the University of Michigan football? Where are we putting in soft tissue recovery into the national championship? So that's, this isn't hypothetical. One of the things that's very different about our model than some of the other recovery yoga models out there is that we actually work in professional sports. And you can layer in our model on top of the training that the coaches think is best for their athletes. And so suddenly now we have a model that explains current phenomenon, predicts future movement phenomenon, right? And allows us to communicate across any environment, any platform, any movement series. I have swimmers at the Olympics. I have bobsledders at the Olympics. I'll have mountain biker at the Olympics. I'll have water polo players at the Olympics. Like we have so many sports that we're using and working in, but the shoulder is still the shoulder.
So in the beginning, you said that the sport of CrossFit has evolved during the last 15 and 20 years. And in the beginning, Greg Glassman, in the center, there was always get better at sports. So you're using this kind of fitness, which you develop in order to get better at life and better at other sports. And now CrossFit has evolved to its own competition kind of sport. So people are training CrossFit to get better at CrossFit, to stay in the gym. And although I kind of like it, I still feel a lot of people, they don't really understand the application of it. So you don't train 2 hours in the gym to go there the next day to train another 2 hours. You train there in order to do other amazing stuff. So if you could go back 20 years in time and you could reinvent the sport in a different direction, would you change something with the knowledge of how it turned out now, or would you just keep it the same?
The amazing thing about the CrossFit Games is that we learned so much about training athletes, about nutrition and energy systems, because it was such an incredible capacity and ability. And what we started to see was that when athletes got tired, their positions got better. And we started to see that in people like Rich Froning and Tia and Annie, and that the inefficiency, really, you could do it for a day or so, but you couldn't do it for 4 days, right? You can do it for a single workout, but you couldn't do it for single workouts across multiple domains. So what we started to learn was, well, that ended up being a very important teaching ground. So if I use Jami Tikkanen, for example, who is the CEO and founder of The Training Plan, he's been coaching Annie and a whole bunch of other athletes for forever. I would say he is one of the most sophisticated coaches in any sport I know. He is maybe the best coach on the planet that no one knows about in terms of his understanding of heart rate variability and recovery and training and breathing and rhythm and volume. You know, it's really remarkable. So the games evolved as its own thing, but it's just like asking, is it important that we have Olympic lifting in the Olympics, or can I also Olympic lift because it makes me better at my sport? And so what we'll see is very specialized athletes who are really good at the CrossFit games. But then what we need to ask ourselves is, what's essential here so that we can go do sports? And I think with the advent of the internet and fitness internet, which is insane, but very confusing, I would say that everyone, it's easy to lose what's important because everyone has a phone and everyone is an expert. But ultimately, the reason we want to make sure that we're keeping our eye on sport is because then we can really start to have important measurements that allow us to see what is the best. And I think if it just became about who looks best in the gym, then that's like saying my car has the biggest engine, but we're never going to race, but my car has the biggest engine and it doesn't really matter.
I like this kind of conclusion and this kind of comparison. I think everyone understands it. And
well, I will say one of the things about CrossFit that was a problem is that it oftentimes took our best athletes and made them look terrible, right? Because they hadn't memorized all of the dance steps. And yet that athlete turns out to be the best athlete in the world. And when we take the best athlete in the world and we say, hey, let's improve your movement competency, let's increase your movement language, let's give you more choice and some more capacities here, we suddenly learn that, wow, if I had some athletes whose upper body could manage lactate a little bit better, then their lower body could work harder because their upper body could be a sinkhole for some of that lactate, right? And there's an example of, boy, it was really useful to put this runner on, give her a kettlebell, make her do pull-ups or ring rows and be on the assault bike, because what we had is an athlete who can now perform more work. Who cares if she's fucking good at kettlebells? And that doesn't matter. What we want to do is say, are you getting better at the prime thing you're trying to get better at? And I think that's where we lose our minds a little bit. And it's okay. It's okay. It's a feature, not a bug. We just have to remind ourselves the point of all this is to do something else.
That's a good word, a good conclusion in the end. Kelly, thanks a lot for your time. I really appreciate it that you took 1 hour out of your day to do this interview with me. And I hope that next time you're in Germany, maybe we can meet. I mean, last time, or the 6 years ago, you've been there for like a whole month, right? You've spent a lot of time in Germany.
Yes, we need to have a training camp there. I'm running this first training camp in June 1st and 2nd in Milan, but I want to start to have more training camps, and maybe we need to have a training camp with you.
We should do it in Germany for sure. So whenever you feel like you need something in Germany and someone where you can do this training camp, let me know. We're in the middle of Germany, very close to Frankfurt Airport. So it's a very good location, and I would be honored.
3 words, Brotzeit. That's all you need to know. As long as we can have Brotzeit, it's going to be just fine.
You can have Spätzle and everything you want, so I can take care of it. It's no problem. We even have bread for you. I know you like bread, right?
Of course I do. Well, thank you so much for today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Kelly, I hope to see you soon, and have a great day.
Danke gleichfalls.